Welcome to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program that showcases radio productions by independent community media. We bring local stories to a national audience produced at a different location each week. I'm Mark Helpsmeet, your host for Song of the Soul, broadcast via WHYS-LP in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. This is a Northern Spirit radio production exploring the spiritual depth and power of music to move our souls. Each week, we journey with our guests to share the songs that have charted their soul's course, and today, I am delighted to welcome singer-songwriter and political activist Cy Conn to our program.
Love of my life, I am crying. I am not dying. I am dancing, dancing along in the madness. There is no sadness, only a song of the soul.
As you'll hear on today's Song of the Soul, Cy Conn's witness, work, and music were inspired by his Jewish upbringing, and that background remained very influential in his decades of activism, whether with unions for peace, against racism, or with grassroots leadership, the organization he founded in 1980. And through it all, Cy sings. Cy Conn joins us today from his home in North Carolina. Cy, at long last, I'm so pleased to have you here for Song of the Soul.
Mark, it's great to be here after such a long time. You know, my longtime friend and music and lecture agent, Josh Dunson, was on with you just, a week ago? He said he had a wonderful conversation with you.
He's a wonderful man, and it's really great that people like you and him, who really have changed for the world at their heart, that we find each other and we help each other forward.
You know, it's true. It's funny. I met Josh, I think, at the University of Chicago Folk Festival in 1979. That was the first time that I had ever sung in public. I was 35 years old, and I think I had my second CD out, but I had never performed in public. Now, I had led singing, you know, at union rallies, political rallies, picket lines, mass meetings, but, you know, it's one thing to get up in front of everybody and do We Shall Not Be Moved when everybody knows it. It's another thing to get out there and do your own songs. And after my set, Josh came up to me and said, "Do you have representation?" I said, "Gee, I don't think I need a lawyer. I hope nobody's going to sue me on account of this." I didn't even know what he meant, you know. But he's been my agent pretty much since. And it's wonderful to work with somebody who shares your human values, who shares your political values, who has a commitment to peace in the world and to justice in the world. You know, you're not just known by the company you keep, you're known by the company that speaks for you. So I wouldn't be comfortable with an agent who was basically, you know, "I don't really agree with your politics, but, you know, I'd like to work with you."
Where did this come from you? You know, I've got enough of your biography. I've got pieces of it all around because of the book that just came out last year, Creative Community Organizing. So I got some vignettes of your life along the way. But I had assumed that you were performing music from very, very early on, maybe from your childhood.
Well, when I was 5 years old, my sister and I would make up little play parodies, you know, and perform them for our parents with a bedsheet as a curtain. And I've been singing music all my life. I'm a passionate traditional folk fan, and I know hundreds of traditional songs. So I've been singing, I've been playing since a very early age, but the performance came much later. But where the music came from, I think so much of it came from my parents, and the values came from my parents. Maybe what we could do here is maybe I could read something from Creative Community Organizing that's really right about this, and also about my own Jewish roots, which are very much a part of why I do the work in the world that I do, and then we could have, you know, some songs that deal with this. Maybe we could do, for example, Lady of the Harbor, which is about one of my grandfathers and very much has to do with the values that I have. Well, this is from Creative Community Organizing, a guide for rabble-rousers, activists, and quiet lovers of justice. And here's what I write. "By now, you will not be surprised to learn that I go through life humming to myself. On a clear day, you can hear me before you can see me. Even when by sheer mental effort I succeed in sealing my lips, if you look deep into my eyes, you can see the notes silently making their way along the staff. where did all this music come from? What is a nice Jewish boy doing singing in a place like this? When I was growing up, not here in the South, where I've now lived and worked for 45 years, but in the deep North, our family sang together. On the Sabbath and on holidays, we would stay at the dinner table long after the food and dishes had been cleared, and we would sing, because musical instruments were not allowed on the Sabbath. We sang without instrumentation, but not without accompaniment. From my grandfather, Gabriel Kahn, who had traveled through Russia with his uncle's Yiddish-Italian opera troupe before he got drafted into the Tsar's army and suddenly became highly motivated to emigrate to the United States. I learned the fine points of creating a rhythm section using only two basic variations, closed fist and open palm, of the basic hand-on-table techniques. From my parents, Rosalind and Benjamin Kahn, I learned, once my sister Jeanette Kahn and I had the basic tunes down, the rudiments of high and low harmony made up as you go along. The songs we sang were mostly prayers, composed thousands of years ago in Hebrew. There were prayers for different holidays, for the beginning of each lunar month, for the Sabbath, and for various combinations thereof. Naturally, over that many years, melodies had changed. My mother's side of the family was convinced that my father's side had changed them accidentally or deliberately, and vice versa. The preferred method for settling these disagreements was to sing as loudly as possible. Whichever side of the family was able to overwhelm the other was generally conceded to have history on its side, along with a correct version of the melody. We sang a little bit in Yiddish, too, folk and story songs from the old country, which in this case meant almost any place in Europe. Hebrew had been the language of prayer for the Jews of Europe, but Yiddish was the language of everyday life. In our house, except for the songs, it had been reduced to the language of secrets, which our parents used when they wanted to communicate with each other privately in front of us. Despite this incentive to learn Yiddish, I never did, beyond the few phrases known to anyone who has lived in New York, regardless of race, color, creed, or national origin. So the truth of the matter is that although I learned many songs, and am amazed at how many I still know by heart, I never understood most of what I was singing. What's wonderful is that it never seemed to matter. I understood quite well what the songs really meant to us as Jews, as a family, as people in the world. They were our bond, our unity, our affirmation, our courage. They were our way of claiming our rhythmic and harmonic relation with each other and with our community. Our songs reinforced our solidarity, our sense that we could overcome the obstacles in our path. They helped us feel proud of the side we were on.
My grandpa was a scholar back in the old country, but he fled from Lithuania in 1893. With knowledge his companion and liberty his hope, he sailed up to the Lady of the Harbor. Imagine then how beautiful that torchlight must have seemed to a frightened Jewish immigrant caught up in freedom's dream. But the land had room for many, and he studied while he worked by the lamplight of the Lady of the Harbor. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send them, the homeless, tempest-tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. in 1937, with war on every hand. A band of Jewish refugees sought shelter in this land. With the Nazis close behind them, they sailed their leaky boats towards the safety of the Lady of the Harbor. But every door was closed to them, no port would take them in. Till sick at heart they sailed back home to Germany again, where their dreams were turned to ashes and their bodies turned to smoke. That drifted past the Lady of the Harbor. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send them, the homeless, tempest-tossed, to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. So if these silent lips could speak, what reasons would they say? Why some are sheltered freely, but others turned away. Now as the terror rises, a fleeing world awaits. An answer from the Lady of the Harbor. For all along the borders, the nightmare comes again, as homeless, stateless refugees seek shelter in this land. Will the lamp be raised to welcome them, or turn them back once more? Only silence from the Lady of the Harbor. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send them, the homeless, tempest-tossed, to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door.
And that song was Lady of the Harbor. It's off of Courage by my guest, Cy Khan. You're listening to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program bringing you local radio productions of national interest. I'm Mark Helpsmeet, and this is Song of the Soul, a Northern Spirit radio production originating from WHYS-LP, Eau Claire, Wisconsin. And we're visiting today with singer-songwriter and political activist Cy Khan, his latest book being Creative Community Organizing, A Guide for Rabble-Rousers, Activists, and Quiet Lovers of Justice. He's also got loads of CDs out there, and the latest, Courage, is a companion CD to many of the stories shared in Creative Community Organizing. In little bits throughout your book, Cy, you make it clear that your Jewish background is important to you. How did that shape you as you grew older?
The religious part of Judaism is not so much what shaped my political views, my activism. It's really much more a sense of Jewish ethics, a sense of Jewish history, and frankly, just the way I was raised. My parents were not political activists in any classic sense, but they were deeply politically aware and concerned. So I'll tell you a story about this. I was raised in State College, Pennsylvania. Today, that's a major mini-metropolis of 100,000 people in the community, something like 40,000 people at the university. When I grew up, it was a small town in the mountains, 6,000 to 8,000 people, and Penn State was still a college with about 8,000 or 9,000 students. In the early 50s, colleges and universities in which virtually all sports had been racially segregated began bringing in African-American players. So the first African-American players arrived on the Penn State campus. They were, in fact, all All-Americans. Jesse Ardell, Rosie Grier, Tony Rados, number 22, Roosevelt Grier. Rosie Grier once came to my school, I think I was in the second grade, and threw me a pass, which I dropped, you know, ending my football career at a very, much too young age, very traumatic. And we had two little barber shops in this town, two chairs each. And they each said, we're not prejudiced, but we don't know how to cut that kind of hair, so we won't. Now, my dad organized a picket line of clergy who, for several days, went up and down with signs in front of these two little barbershops demanding that they cut everybody's hair, as any barbershop should. My mom, who did not drive, got somebody to take her to Tyrone, which was a pulp mill town about 25, 30 miles through the mountains, meaning it was a long drive, which had a reasonably large African-American community. And Mom walked into an African-American barbershop, explained the situation to the barber, and said, would you be willing to come down every 2 weeks? I'll set up a chair in the kitchen, and you can cut these young students' hair. And that's what she did. So, you know, when you have that kind of upbringing, where your parents are not just talking about social justice, but make it real in their lives, and in very different ways, in public vocal ways, and in quiet, private ways, how can you not grow up to believe? So I think that's one factor. The other factor, and I think behind my parents' sense of justice, was the Holocaust. I mean, I was born in 1944. My mom and my dad, our entire family, lost terribly in the Holocaust. I don't have real numbers. I would say probably 30 to 40 family members were murdered. You know, my parents' grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins, nieces, nephews. In my mom's case, many of these were people she knew. They had come to this country and gone back and been caught up in the Holocaust. I think that one of the truths about the Jewish community in the United States, particularly in the 60s and 70s, was that the experience of the Holocaust was so traumatic. It was such an individual and collective trauma that individual Jews were motivated towards social justice, partly by the understanding that if this starts with anybody, it can reach you. You cannot let racism and misogyny and homophobia and any kind of violent, prejudiced attitude begin to take root with any group of people, because sooner or later it spreads. It never ends with just those people. I expressed this in a song called Children of Poland that is about Janusz Korczak, who is a doctor in the Warsaw Ghetto. This is his story at the beginning, but the ending is really about stating in music what I just said to you.
In the city of Warsaw, such a long time ago, 200 children stand lined row on row, with their freshly washed faces and freshly washed clothes. The children of Poland, who never grow old. In the orphanage yard, not a child remains. The soldiers have herded them down to the trains, carrying small flasks of water and bags of dry bread, to march in the ranks of the unquiet dead, with their small Jewish faces and pale haunted eyes. They march hand in hand down the street. No one cries, no one laughs, no one looks, no one turns, no one talks, as they walk down the streets where my grandparents walked. Had my grandparents stayed in that dark, bloody land, my own children too would have marched hand in hand to the beat of the soldiers, the jackbooted stamp that would measure their lives till they died in those camps. The cries of my children at night take me back to those pale, hollow faces in stark white and black. Only the blood of the children remains. It runs in the streets, and it runs in our veins.
That was from the CD In My Heart, a retrospective by Cy Khan, who's with us here today, Song of the Soul, Children of Poland. That isn't directly about your family. The first one we listened to, Lady of the Harbor, that's directly your lineage, right?
Yeah, that's my mother's father, Simon Hirsch Aronson, after whom I was named.
What a wonderful, rich heritage you draw on. You've worked in so many areas of organizing, Cy. You know, I kind of wonder about the overall values that propel you in this. Are there other things, other threads of it that we should know about?
You know, the other thing I would add is just a lifetime spent in the movement. I feel like I got so much back from my work as a civil rights organizer, as a union organizer, as a community organizer. What I know, I learned from people. I learned from wonderful people. Nobody famous, nobody whose name anybody would recognize, but people who had just skill and heart, who did wonderful work. My years with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, with SNCC, my years with the United Mine Workers of America, the Brookside Strike in Harlan County, years with the Amalgamated Clothing and Textile Workers Union, the J.P. Stevens Campaign, the 30 years of grassroots leadership and all the campaigns and work that we did around environmental issues, peace issues, feminist issues, racism, and then this really extraordinary campaign. Grassroots Leadership is the leading organization anywhere in the world, fighting for-profit private prisons and immigrant detention, working on immigration issues. You know, everyone I've worked with ever has taught me so much.
Well, I'm hoping that for your Song of the Soul, you'll share at least one song that highlights some of the pro-union and anti-injustice work you talk about in your creative community organizing book. Could you share one of those tunes?
The situation I just described is, what should we say, emblazoned through the song Hutto. Hutto was the name of the for-profit private immigrant detention center in Taylor, Texas. It was named after T. Don Hutto, who was a officer of Corrections Corporation of America, the world's largest for-profit private prison corporation, and this is their story.
The man called T. Don Hutto must have been some kind of man, 'cause he sure got a man-sized share of fame. It's not just anybody gets their name put on a building where children are held prisoner in their name. The town of Taylor, Texas, is just an hour from Austin, but when you're there, you're in a world away. Look inside the prison yard, just beyond the chain link fence, you will see young children at their play. Might well stop and ask yourself, what have these young children done to be sentenced to such painful loss and fear? It's all because their mom or dad was caught here without documents, like 12 million others living here. Now you may think all immigrants should go back where they came from, and if they don't, hell, let them rot in jail. But if it was your own daughter in a cell at T. Don Hutto, with your grandchild in her arms, how would you feel? What would you say if your old 2, 4, 6, or 8-year-old was growing up in prison like these kids? Since when in these United States do we put kids in prison because of what we say their parents did? Call it family detention. Say we do it for the children. You're lying to yourself down to the roots. But call it playing politics with children's lives and sanity. You're getting somewhat closer to the truth. So if you're down in Austin, take the highway out to Taylor. Bring some good friends with you for the ride. You might even wear a flag pin to show you still believe in the dream for which so many fought and died. Step out onto the highway, turn to face the prison, stare at those walls till you forget your name. Prayer for T. Don Hutto. Say a prayer for all those children. And close your eyes and hang your head in shame.
That was Hutto, Cy Khan. It's from his newest CD, Courage, kind of a musical companion to the stories and lessons of Cy's latest book, Creative Community Organizing, A Guide for Rabble-Rousers, Activists, and Quiet Lovers of Justice. This has been about half of the hour-long Song of the Soul interview I did with Cy Khan. Hear the full program, more stories and more music at northernspiritradio.org. Again, that's northernspiritradio.org. That's it for Sprouts. You've been listening to a Song of the Soul interview with Cy Khan, hosted by Mark Helpsmeet. Our theme music is Song of the Soul by Chris Williamson. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the country, bringing you local radio productions of national interest. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio. Thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts to showcase it nationally, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. I'm Mark Helpsmeet at Northern Spirit Radio in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Thank you for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.